told us what the surgeons did to the president. What are they doing or trying to do to eliminate the Brady condition?
Well,
exactly what happened after they owned the hospital.
Okay, I can't, again, anything I'm telling you is rather speculative. Normally, they would have to remove the tissue that seemed irreparably damaged. Anytime you're operating inside the head, for very obvious reasons, you try and salvage as much tissue as you think has a remote chance of recovering. This is not, a good injury. It's it causes a lot of damage. That was extremely remote. Well, I think any time a patient is in critical condition, in a sense, he's fighting for his life.
Did the patient get any first aid in the car on the way over?
I really can't answer that question. I don't know.
What type of medication is the president on, or will he be on while he's in the hospital? Is he on any IVs, any painkillers?
Well, one would, he's on intravenous solution right now. As I said, he required no blood intraoperatively. And as with any patient, the medications really depend upon what the patient's needs are. I would expect the president is probably not going to need very many medications, except perhaps some modest painkillers for a day or so.
What type of recuperation is normal for a person in physiological age? Do you expect him to be back to normal routine within 8 months?
Depends on a totally normal routine. I would guess probably a couple of months after his hospitalization, so maybe 2.5 to 3 months might be a good guess, but it is a guess.
Would you recommend that he leave Washington for, say, his ranch, where there's a less stressful situation around him for a while?
Well, that's really up to him and his staff. I'm sure that he will be adequately protected. I don't know the answer to that question.
And exactly, would you advise him to take off further time beyond the time that he's hospitalized?
Well, taking off time depends on what you're talking about. Talking
away from the duties of the president.
That's really not, my judgment to make for him. I think that I would urge him to limit his physical activity within reason. There is no reason to believe that he has any impairment of his ability to make decisions or what have you. Making decisions is stressful business, but I think he's going to be fully up to it.
Doctor, earlier there was a report that the bullet missed the heart by an inch. He said it missed by several inches. Several inches is a relatively short time. Sorry, check. He didn't affect the heart. Much closer than that.
Okay, I think. Well, I wasn't specifically there in the operating room. I think I know where those reports came because, remember, when we're in an operating room, the only x-ray that we can really get that's going to be valid is one that is taken from front to back. Okay, and when you held that up, it looked as if the bullet was close to the heart, but you were missing that third dimension. And that in that third dimension, it turned out that the bullet was significantly removed from the heart by several inches, as I said. It was not close.
Dr. Dennis O'Leary, finishing off his analysis of the president's operation and his medical condition, the questions beginning to wind down a little bit. What the doctor said, in case you came in a little late, this news conference has gone for about 25 minutes. What he said at the beginning was that at no time was the president in any serious danger. He was in the operating room for about 2 hours. The bullet ricocheted off his seventh rib, went about 3 inches into the left lung. The bullet was removed, and he said repeatedly, in fact, that the president's prognosis is excellent because he's such a marvelous physiological specimen. He said that the president is now clear of head and that he should be able to make decisions tomorrow. And he was questioned on that at some length, as you may have heard, and he said the president would be fully capable of making decisions of state by tomorrow. He might be on some modest painkiller, but that's about all. As to the president's progress through the operation, he said, well, he's certainly sailed through it. His vital signs absolutely rock stable through the entire operation. So that is the medical report on the president's condition as given by Dr. Dennis O'Leary, who is the Dean of Clinical Affairs at the George Washington University Hospital, the nearest hospital to the president at the time of his accident, and one of the finest of his of the assassination attempt, and one of the finest teaching hospitals in the city. There were several questions, as you may have heard, about moving the president, and that once again is because, in general, presidents are taken to either of the two major military hospitals, either Walter Reed Army Hospital or to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and that is strictly for reasons of security. Both those hospitals have isolated suites, which are very well guarded by military guards and are well removed from any place that the public could get into. George Washington University Hospital, as simply an ordinary hospital, does not have, in general, that kind of facility, so there was some question as to whether, after a few days, the president might better be moved to one of the two military hospitals. And Dr. O'Leary naturally said repeatedly that that was not his decision to make. That was a decision of state and security, not a medical decision, but that probably he shouldn't be moved for a few days. So, Reed Collins in New York, that is the medical assessment of the condition of President Reagan. At this point, his condition is excellent, at no time in any serious danger.
Thank you, George Herman. And that sort of wraps up what has been a long stanza in the history of contemporary Americana. Mr. Reagan, wounded by an apparent would-be assassin this afternoon, three others shot down with him as they exited a hotel in downtown Washington, D.C. Those three, the president's press secretary, James Brady, who, as we have heard, has suffered a wound in the brain. He may be, obviously is, the most serious among those who were wounded. A Secret Service agent, Timothy McCarthy, wounded in the right chest. A District of Columbia policeman, Thomas Delahanty, also wounded, apparently a neck wound that has some nerve involvement. And the president himself, the eldest and the most visibly important of all, perhaps, wounded in the chest, but recovering after 2 hours of surgery, as we just have heard. His wife, Mrs. Reagan, remains with him. One of his children, at least, is busy flying in from Nebraska. The Vice President, George Bush, is on the ground in Washington, in the briefing room in the White House, prepared to do whatever this day requires of him as far as taking over the reins, if that is necessary. It would be indicated, however, it will not be, according to the medical briefing we just heard. In custody, a young man, 25 years of age, from Evergreen, Colorado, named John Hinckley, who is believed to have been the assailant who wielded a .22 caliber pistol this afternoon in Washington, D.C., and wounded these four men: Reagan, Brady, McCarthy, Delahanty. A bad day for the Irish and a bad day for their country. This is Reed Collins, CBS News, New York.
We'll have more CBS News next at 7 o'clock. In the Twin Cities, skies are cloudy. The current Twin City temperature reading 47 degrees. The winds are southwest at 5. News from CBS next at 7. From WCCO, Minneapolis-St. Paul, good neighbor to the Northwest.
The president is in the recovery room. He is in stable condition, and he is awake. He was in no time in any serious danger. He was alert and awake with stable vital signs up until the time he underwent anesthesia.
That's Dr. Dennis O'Leary a short time ago at George Washington University Hospital in Washington on President Reagan's condition after an assassination attempt today. I'm Stephanie Shelton reporting on the CBS Radio Network. President Reagan sustained a bullet wound in the chest. The bullet went through his left lung. After exploratory surgery, Dr. O'Leary explained to reporters what was done.
He was in the operating room for approximately 2 hours. Part of that time was spent ascertaining that he did not have any blood in his abdominal cavity. Indeed, he did not. It was a single bullet wound that entered slightly underneath the left armpit. It traversed about 3 inches of the chest wall and then ricocheted off the seventh rib into the left lower lobe of the lung and moved about 3 inches into the lung substance itself. The operative incision is about 6 inches in width, relatively simple procedure. The bullet was removed and then the incision was closed. And as I say, he is stable and in good condition.
Dr. O'Leary says the president, although he's 70, is a good physical specimen, is clear of head, should be well able to make decisions by tomorrow.
A guesstimate, he said, that Mr. Reagan should be hospitalized about 2 weeks. More on the story in a minute.
Grand Central Station, next stop.
Ever walk through a smoking car on a train? That's where you see people who really need Topol, the smoker's tooth polish. Excuse me, sir, have you ever used Topol?
As a matter of fact, my wife bought a tube for me just this week. I haven't given it much of a chance yet, but my teeth feel clean. And she says it's helped get rid of my tobacco breath, too.
That's because of its fresh mint flavor.
Sounds like you're a Topol user. Your teeth certainly look bright.
Thanks, I am.
What made you try Topol?
It's tough to give up smoking, but I didn't want to give up smiling.
Mint-flavored Topol has given thousands of people reason to smile. Because Topol goes to work immediately to help get rid of superficial yellow tobacco stains. Not only cleans your teeth, helps clean your tobacco breath, too. Just use Topol week after week. And watch your teeth get brighter and stay brighter.
What about people like me, who like a fluoride toothpaste?
No problem. Topol is available in regular or fluoride, in 3-ounce and 7-ounce economy size.
Hey, guess I'll give Topol a try.
Topol, use only as directed.
The sequence of events this shocking afternoon were these. President Reagan walked out of a Washington hotel after giving a speech to a labor group, trying to rally some support for his budget-cutting program, which was being debated by the Senate. When Mr. Reagan was about halfway to his car, four or more shots rang out. Mr. Reagan was shoved into his limousine by Secret Service agents, and at that time, according to later reports, not realizing that he himself was shot. News Secretary James Brady, a Secret Service agent, and a Washington policeman were shot also. Brady, doctors say, is still in surgery in critical condition. He sustained extensive brain damage when a bullet passed through his head and out the other side. The Reagan's pastor for many years, the Reverend Don Mumar of the Bel Air, California Presbyterian Church, reached in Hamilton, Bermuda, said he wasn't surprised Mr. Reagan didn't know he was shot.
That's the kind of person he is. It takes an awful lot to get him down, awful lot happens to him before he loses his cool, and that sounds very much in character, and even joking going into the operating room sounds very much like him. I'm amazed at his resiliency under pressure.
One man is in custody tonight in Washington, charged with the attempted assassination of the president and assault with attempt to kill a police officer. He is 25-year-old John W. Hinckley, Jr. of Evergreen, Colorado, and there is still no word of any motive for the shootings. Senator Edward Kennedy, whose brothers John and Robert were killed by assassin's bullets in the 1960s, was placed under Secret Service protection today, shortly after the president was wounded in a shooting spree. Kennedy's office said that decision was made after a consultation with the Secret Service and Capitol Hill Police. Now this.
I'm Lydia, Arnold Palmer's private secretary. And if you're as busy as my boss, you should take care of details like he does, by dictating, with Lanier's slim new Best Pocket Assistant. Listen.
Lydia, please confirm my reservations for the sales meeting. And when I get back, remind me to call Tom Ryan.
Get a lot more done in a lot less time. Give us a call. Talk to Lanier. We'll show you our lot.
Look for Lanier in the yellow pages under dictating machines.
If we don't want a racetrack right next to the town hospital, we've got to send the town council a piece of our mind.
What a difference a mail run makes in 24 little hours.
A Western Union mailgram message is a fast way to register a protest. Just call Western Union, and within seconds, a piece of your mind is on its way for delivery with the next business day's mail.
And it's only a day away, that mailgram from you.
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has postponed the Oscar Awards, scheduled for tonight, until tomorrow. President Reagan was to have opened the ceremony tonight with a videotape speech. I'm Stephanie Shelton, CBS News.
This is the village of Werther in Northern Europe. Things haven't changed very much in Werther from the way they were years ago. Like the old stone church across the street there, steeple pointing to the heavens as it has for more than 400 years. Narrow streets still wind between old buildings that lean together like gossips over the back fence. And it is here that Werther's original butter candies were made years ago and still made today from the original old world recipe with real honest-to-goodness butter, rich dairy cream, and lots of time to slowly cook it all together. Isn't it time to have it good again? Werther's original butter candies, imported from Europe. The way they were is the way they are today. Sweet, smooth, and buttery. Each candy is individually wrapped and comes in big bags for sharing or in handy rolls just for you. Look for imported Werther's original butter candies wherever candy is sold, because it's time to have it good again.
Good evening. This is Bill Deal with you on WCCO Radio. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock. We will keep you informed of all developments regarding the situation today in the nation's capital, the condition of all of those involved. Any late updates, we will have them for you immediately here on WCCO Radio, where you do hear history as it happens. We will bring you not only the news from our own WCCO Radio News Bureau, but net alerts and the full facilities of the WCCO News Services, CBS, AP, UPI, and Associated Press Radio. I want to take a look at the weather with you for just a moment. The last word was that the condition of the president is good. He's out of surgery. The prognosis for his recovery is excellent. Tragedy still surrounds the shooting in Washington, particularly the condition of the press secretary. We will keep you informed of all developments as they happen. First of all, turning to our weather here tonight in the Twin Cities, it's going to be cloudy overnight with a slight chance of showers developing toward morning. The overnight low should be about 40, cloudy on Tuesday with a good chance of showers and occasional thunderstorms, cloudy and windy Tuesday night with a chance of showers and lows in the mid to the upper 30s. Mostly cloudy and windy and cooler on Wednesday in the Twin Cities with highs in the lower 50s. Now, that chance of moisture is put at 20% late tonight, 50% on Tuesday, and still high 40% for Tuesday night. The new readings are in. The barometer is rising from 29.68. The winds are southwest at 5. The relative humidity stands at 70%. We have a cloudy sky, and currently the Twin Cities area temperature, the new reading is in, 46 degrees. Again, I cannot stress enough that we will bring you any late-breaking developments in the attempted assassination of the President of the United States this afternoon, and you can be assured that if you leave that radio right where it is at 830, anything, any new developments, any background, any significant turn in the story, we will have it for you this evening here on WCCO. Cloudy and 46 degrees, 9 minutes past 7. I'm Bill Deal. Don Haber is at the controls this evening. We'll have some music for you, and as conditions warrant, we'll check that weather, check news developments, keep you informed of everything. Now, music on WCCO Radio. Thank you. minutes after 7 o'clock on WCCO Radio. Cloudy and a temperature of 46 degrees. The latest word from Washington. The doctors say that President Reagan is now out of surgery. His condition is good. The prognosis for his recovery is excellent. We're looking at cloudy skies tonight. A slight chance of showers developing toward morning. Overnight low about 40. It's 46 degrees.
San Diego, you feel good all over. San Diego, you feel good all over.
When you want to feel good all over, hop aboard Western Airlines and fly to San Diego. In just a few hours, you could be jogging at the ocean's edge or sailing on the bay, enjoying golf, sport fishing, or a shopping trip to nearby Mexico. Western gives you all this and more, like low fares and convenient daily flights. So when you get the San Diego feeling, call Western Airlines or your local travel agent. Then start feeling good about your next getaway.
You've got beauty in your favor, a style of your own. You've got me back for sure, feeling right at home. San Diego feels good.
And so, the latest word on President Reagan, condition good, prognosis for recovery, excellent. Theodore Roosevelt was an ex-president on that day in 1912 when a gunman shot him as he was standing in an open car on his way to deliver a speech in Milwaukee. The shot, October 14, 1912, was fired from 10 feet away. And the .38 caliber bullet passed through Roosevelt's steel spectacle case and 100 pages of his doubled-over speech manuscript before it entered his body. The bullet went 3 inches into Roosevelt's chest and lodged against the thin pleural tissue that protected his lung. The shot was fired by John F. Schrank, a New York bartender born in Germany who had followed Roosevelt, who was campaigning for the Progressive Party candidacy for president after having been president earlier as a Republican. Teddy Roosevelt was not even knocked over by the shot, and he went on to the auditorium where he delivered a speech. He spoke before an audience of 9,000 persons. People were shocked as they viewed his blood-stained shirt, but Teddy said, "It takes more than one bullet to kill a bull moose." The Progressive Party was nicknamed the Bull Moose Party, and Teddy Roosevelt went on to speak for 80 minutes before he left for medical care. Schrank was later declared insane, but Roosevelt was reported to have said, "That doesn't sound like insanity to me. He waited to shoot me until he was in Wisconsin where there is no capital punishment." When the shot was fired, Albert Martin, Roosevelt's secretary, knocked Schrank to the ground. The crowd began to holler, "Lynch him, lynch him." But Teddy Roosevelt said, "Stop. Stand back. Don't hurt him." Memories of October 14th, 1912 in Milwaukee. It's 16 minutes after 7 o'clock. Here in the Twin Cities, a cloudy sky, about a 40% chance of rain tomorrow, building during the night. Cloudy now and 46 degrees.
Did not need any blood transfusion during the surgery. And is already, we're told by Dr. Dennis O'Leary, again awake and alert in the intensive care unit. Of the others who were wounded in this afternoon shooting, the Secret Service agent, Timothy McCarthy, according to Dr. O'Leary, also suffered a chest wound. He underwent extensive surgery, but is, says Dr. O'Leary, doing extremely well. The other patient who is in George Washington University Hospital is the White House Press Secretary, James Brady. And in this case, Dr. O'Leary was much more guarded in describing Brady's condition. He said Brady is still undergoing surgery. His wound was a bullet to the head, the left side of the forehead. Probably, Dr. O'Leary said, Mr. Brady suffered some brain damage.
He's on his way down to the bathroom right now.
And he did not describe his condition at this point. So now the announcement is made that the vice president is on his way down to the press room. So we should be hearing from him very shortly. Here is the deputy press secretary.
The vice president
Larry
will be in the briefing room shortly. For your information, the vice president landed at Andrews at 6:30. He came to the situation room at 7 o'clock. which he presided over a meeting of the some members of the cabinet. He will make a brief statement. I will not take questions, but I will follow and take some questions.
Now, that was Larry Speaks, the deputy press secretary. He's turned away from the podium, and now here is the vice president, George Bush.
Well, I have a very brief statement that I would like to read. I am deeply heartened by Dr. O'Leary's report on the president's condition. That he has emerged from this experience with flying colors and with the most optimistic prospects for a complete recovery. I can reassure this nation and a watching world that the American government is functioning fully and effectively. We've had full and complete communications throughout the day, and the officers of the federal government have been fulfilling their obligations with skill and with care. I know I speak on behalf of the president and his family when I say that we are very grateful to all, to many people from across this country who've expressed their concern at this act of violence. And finally, let me add our profound concern on behalf of two brave law enforcement officers who served to protect the president, and then, of course, for a friend of everybody here, dedicated public servant Jim Brady. We're going to watch their progress with all our prayers, with all our hopes. And now I'm going to walk over and speak briefly to Mrs. Reagan, who's returned to the residence. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
And the press secretary turns away to leave the briefing room. The vice president, I should say, George Bush. And now we'll be hearing from
the press secretary. Let me go over what I know to be the situation as I saw it here. As I said, the vice president arrived in the situation at Andrews at 6:30. He came to the situation room at 7 o'clock. Present in that meeting, and this is not necessarily in any order, but it's more or less the way they were sitting at the table. The vice president, of course, Ed Meese, Richard Allen, Secretary Lewis, Attorney General Smith, Secretary Weinberg, Secretary Reagan, Admiral Murphy of the vice president's staff, Jim Baker, the White House chief of staff, and Secretary Haig. Also Secretary Brock, Secretary Baldrige, Secretary Watt, and CIA Director Casey. In addition, there were other staff members present, such as Martin Allen and David Gergen and Max Friedersdorf and Fred Fielding. The meeting continued for about 30 minutes, at which time the medical press conference from the hospital came on the television, and we watched that basically to its conclusion. The vice president then went to his office, drafted the statement, and came here. Mrs. Reagan has returned from the hospital, as the vice president said, and he's now going over to visit with her. As far as tomorrow, we will basically continue with the schedule as the president had planned. There is a plan for a brief meeting of the cabinet, a plan for a brief meeting with the congressional leadership, and then to continue with the schedule, which includes a meeting and a working luncheon with the Prime Minister of the Netherlands. The Vice President. I really don't want to go into that except to say that the general situation was discussed. The vice president received...